You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy game day, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat on this Thursday afternoon, it's finally game day again in Houston. It'll be a late one for the Rockets tonight, 9:30 in Utah, nationally televised game on TNT. It's their first game since Sunday night in Los Angeles. It's been a weird quirk in the schedule where the Rockets have only had one game since this past Wednesday, one in the past 8 days, but finally, we're getting back to basketball. As of tonight, we'll be getting back into the flow. Well, I might not have a post-game show until the morning since it's so late, but either way, we'll be getting back into the normal flow here at Locked On Rockets of analyzing actual basketball. In the absence of news this week, of course, we've been taking the time here on this show to look at a few bigger picture items. Our most recent show yesterday, we looked at the MVP straw poll, which has Harden leading the way even ahead of LeBron James, which is quite an accomplishment given that LeBron's having just an insane season, shooting almost 60% from the field and over 40% from three, which of course reflects just how great the Rockets have been and just how dominant James Harden has been in that process. Also in yesterday's show, looked at kind of the tiers of the Western Conference, the race for the one seed against Golden State, and also who the Rockets need to hold off, most notably San Antonio, to make sure at a bare minimum they at least have the second seed in the playoffs, which is what they did not have this past season when they lost to San Antonio in the second round, a series in which they did not have home court. So in the absence of real games, we've been looking at a few bigger picture items, and some of those, of course, involving James Harden, because as James Harden goes, so do the Rockets. That's just the way it works when you have one of the best players on the planet leading your basketball team. So as of tonight, we'll be back to basketball, but today I figured one more show we'll dedicate to some bigger picture talk, because if you saw on my Twitter yesterday, at Ben Dubose, boy, Rockets Twitter, NBA Twitter, we got into another fun James Harden debate. I think it's natural between the release of the MVP poll, also the lack of games this week for the Rockets. It's a time to think bigger picture. What have we learned? What's going to happen when things really get to pressure-packed situations in the spring and hopefully summer of next year? And as far as I can tell, the discussion got going on social media based on just a ridiculous take from Max Kellerman on ESPN's First Take, in which I believe they were talking about the MVP results, and he said that Harden was a system player, which of course is laughable, because Harden 2 years ago, or I guess, yeah, 2 years ago, it was the year that they started with Kevin McHale for 11 games, then went through a midseason coaching change to J.B. Bickerstaff, an interim first-time head coach, and despite all that turmoil and Bickerstaff, who seemed largely outmatched for a lot of that year, Harden had one of the best offensive seasons that the league has ever seen, just an out-of-this-world year, and that was with a first-time interim guy leading the way. So the idea that Harden is just a product of Mike D'Antoni, that's just silly. And of course, has he gotten even better since then? Fortunately for the Rockets, yes, he has, but I would actually argue that Harden's biggest strides since 2 years ago have come on the defensive end and also in terms of leadership. As far as his offensive game, folks, it was already there. James Harden is a dominant offensive player, which he has been his entire tenure, now in his sixth season in Houston. So that's just a terrible take from Max Kellerman, and it's one of those you see a lot of national guys just throw out laughable lines like that because they know it's going to get traction on social media, they know it's going to get clicks out of curiosity for their videos on YouTube, etc., etc. So I'm not really so much wanting to do a show to address that. What I want to do a show to address is then the offspring of that, which then devolves into what about playoff Harden? What happened in game six last year, and does that devalue what he's doing in the regular season at all? And I've mentioned this topic a few times the last few weeks on this show. I haven't done a full show dedicated to it, but I've touched on it in pieces why I think that's unfair for a lot of reasons. I've mentioned the team aspect before, also Harden's individual lines. But in this show, I really want to make it all about the James Harden playoff narrative, because I want to push back against this, but I want to do it in a way in which hopefully will make people understand why it's a reasonable critique. Because what I saw yesterday, and not just amongst NBA Twitter, even some within the Rockets community, is there seems to be a segment that any time you point out Harden's playoff highlights, that there's a certain faction that seem to believe that that's giving him a pass for the struggle, such as the end of Game 5 against the Spurs and the entirety of Game 6 last year. And I could not disagree more strongly than that. For me personally, I've been very harsh on James, especially if you listen to my podcast after Game 5 of the Spurs series last year. I thought that was the most egregious example. I don't know what they were doing. Maybe fatigue was a factor, but the Rockets had every opportunity to take that game and the series by the throat, and instead Harden held the ball, the movement never initiated before maybe 4 to 5 seconds left on the shot clock. The offense got very predictable. Many of the wounds were self-inflicted. I was very hard on James, and so that's why I kind of resent the implication that noting his positive accomplishments in the playoffs is in some way making an excuse or saying you're okay with the lowlights, because I'm not. Those need to get better, and it's a fair critique of James Harden if you're looking at his overall career, if you're looking at, in terms of predictive value, what's going to happen for the Rockets this coming season. It's a fair point to address, and it's about time we do a full show based on that. Where I draw the line, and I think it's important, is in just having overbroad simplifications, generalizations such as choker, quitter, whatever you want to throw out there. We saw a few accounts throwing those words out yesterday. I think it all started with that Max Kellerman take, and then of course it just devolves into on social media, well, what do you think about James Harden? And so to kind of offer my take on it, I think the best way is kind of split it up. There are three aspects of this as I see it. There's correctly identifying the problem, there's identifying why, and then there's how do you fix it. And I'm going to start with correctly identifying the problem, because to me this is at its most simple. If you want to fix a problem, you need to correctly identify it. It's just like anything else. If you're not properly identifying what the problem is, how are you going to take a course of action to improve it? And this idea that's out there amongst some in NBA circles, and even some in Houston sports circles, sadly, that James Harden is, you know, a choker, a quitter, he doesn't play well when the games are at their biggest, that's just absolutely laughable. For every example you can throw out of, you know, an underachieving performance in the playoffs, I can point out two or three in which he was just out of his mind, incredibly good. You look at that Spurs series last year, yes, Game 5, Game 6, those were bad. You look at Game 3 and Game 4 in Houston, when he shot over 50% from the field in Game 3 and Game 4, including Game 4 when the Rockets tied the series. Game 3, even though they lost, he scored 43 points. He had 14 assists to just 3 turnovers in Game 1 of that Spurs series last year, which they won in a romp. And by the way, the idea that his lowlights only come in elimination games, no, actually, I would argue that his worst game of the Spurs series was actually Game 2 last year when he shot 3 of 17, 13 and 10. That was a game the Rockets had an opportunity to go up 2-0, even though they ended up losing by 20-plus. The game was actually there for the taking in the third quarter. It just got away very late. But that game was there. The Rockets could have put a stranglehold on the series, and Harden just had a bad night. And if you want to go back to earlier seasons, we hear a lot about elimination Harden. Well, that's just silly, because I've retweeted stats, Red Nation Hoops on Twitter, that's Salman Ali. He's great at just dispersing that narrative. But he posted the other night Harden stats in elimination games, which are just fine. 2 years ago, the 2016 playoffs, the Game 5 in Oakland, they were down 3-1. Harden had, I believe, over 30 points on better than 50% shooting from the field, actually 35 points. He played out of his world. It was the teammates that did not show up. You go back to 2015, people fixate on the Game 5 in Oakland in the Western Conference Finals when Harden turned it over, I believe, 12 times and the Rockets were eliminated. Okay, but what about Game 4, which was also an elimination game when Harden had 45 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds on 60% shooting from the field and almost 65% from 3. What about that one? That's also an elimination game. Or the first two games of that series when he played out of his mind in Golden State and gave the Rockets a chance in the final 2 minutes in both of those games. We had a guy who was shooting more than 50% from the field, averaging almost 40 points per game. He completely outclassed Stephen Curry, who was the MVP of the league that year, those first two games in Curry's home gym. That's how good he was. And that was on, again, a huge playoff stage. Folks talk about Game 6 of the Clippers series that year, in which, of course, Josh Smith and Corey Brewer led the comeback. Well, what about Game 7, the actual closeout game in which Harden scored, I believe, 31 points and was instrumental in the Rockets shutting the door on the Clippers? Or what about Game 5, and they were down 3-1? It would have been so easy to pack it in, and Harden ended up with a triple-double. You could go back and forth through all of these. Even the 2014, that's the closest thing the Rockets had to, you know, underachieving. Even then, that wasn't underachieving. The Rockets and Blazers had the same record that year. Game 6, Harden had 34 points on 60% shooting. That was the Damian Lillard game. And if not for Lillard's miracle, the Rockets are going back to Houston for a home Game 7. The idea that Harden elimination games has been consistently bad or Harden in high-pressure moments, that's just lunacy. Now, he's had a few bad moments, yes, but the idea that he's a choker or a quitter, that implies that the idea is, well, just try harder, just don't quit, don't choke, and then the problem should resolve itself. No, because we have seen plenty of games under very major stakes in the postseason in which James Harden has been incredible. That's not letting him off the hook for the games that he was not incredible. That's just simply pointing out facts and saying, hey, the problem is not as simple as, well, you choked or, well, you quit. No, because if that were to happen, then, again, you would see it across the board in high leverage moments. I would also point out the team angle here, which I've pointed out before. The Rockets have been to the playoffs all 5 full seasons that Harden has been here, and this season will certainly make it 6. And in each of those, every time the Rockets have had a better record than the opponent, they have won the series. They have only lost series to teams that have been better than them, or in the case of the Blazers, the same record over the course of 82 games. So if there was something different about James Harden in the playoffs than James Harden in the regular season, then certainly a team featuring him in as their best player would have demonstratively worse results than what has happened in the regular season. And that's not what happens at all. The Rockets in the playoffs have been a perfect mirror for the team they've been in the regular season in terms of the team results. I would argue for James individually as well. And then, of course, you can look at his overall numbers. Folks, in all 5 playoff runs for Harden in Houston, he's averaged more than 26 points per game. In the box score plus minus stat, he's been, this is what's pretty telling, he's had a box score plus minus of 7 or better. That's adjusted per 100 possessions. His box score plus minus has been 7 or better in 3 postseasons with the Rockets, I believe the last 3. He has only had 2 such seasons in his entire career with a box score plus minus of 7 or better. Now, this season will make it a 3rd, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs. But the point is, there's nothing, if you look at individual series or the overall numbers, that suggests that playoff Harden, you know, hashtag playoff Harden, whatever you want to call it, is demonstratively worse than regular season Harden, the guy that most of us agree should have been MVP in 2 of the past 3 seasons and seems to be the leader right now. So that's where I want to start, is you need to understand what the problem is. Because if you just say that, well, he choked or he quit, then you're implying that the solution is as simple as just try harder. And the reality is that, folks, he's had plenty of great moments on the major stage. And acknowledging those, when someone points out that, oh, he choked in Game 6 and pointing out all the other things, that's not letting him off the hook. That's not saying that that is okay. It's not. What happened, I would say, especially Game 5 of the Spurs series last year, still bothers me to this day. That was a golden opportunity for the Rockets to get to the Western Conference Finals against Golden State, and for whatever reason, it fell through the cracks. It still bothers me. So no, I'm not letting him off the hook and pretending that those don't exist. What I'm trying to do is have a balanced discussion about what we have seen from James Harden in the playoffs so that hopefully we can come to a better understanding of how to potentially fix it for the Rockets moving forward. That's step 1 to me, which is identifying exactly what has happened, because that's how you fix it. I think step 2 in the process is then trying to come to an understanding as to the possible reasons for why that happened. Because I think we can agree, the issue for James Harden is not that he does not show up in the playoffs. The issue has been occasional bouts of inconsistency and these clunkers from time to time, in which, you know, you can point out Game 6 of the Clippers series when he wasn't on the floor for most of the fourth quarter. You can point out late in Game 5 and Game 6 last year against the Spurs, or even, as I said earlier, Game 2 against the Spurs, which is not a high-pressure situation, but there was a clunker nonetheless, 3-for-17 for Harden from the field. And as I said, I think leading off, it doesn't need to be framed as choking or quitting. The issue needs to be framed as inconsistency, and how do you fix that? And I would start more supporting evidence for that. I would point out that this is not just a playoff issue for James. There are these games over the course of the regular season as well. There were 2 games late March last year when he was 5-of-20 and 4-of-17 against the Warriors. Both were losses. I haven't seen as many this year. That's good news. We'll touch on why in a little bit. But you know, at the All-Star break last year, he had, 13 points out of his big win in New Orleans. But 3 of 9 from the field. He had a game, a loss in Indiana at the end of a grueling January, which he had just 15 points on 3 of 17 shooting. He had a game, 6 of 24 in Washington. There have been lowlights in the regular season, too. There's just a few examples going through his box score from last year. But he has had lowlights, and many of them have come in games the Rockets have lost. It's just, for whatever reason, folks fixate on the ones in the playoffs, and I get why the lens is brighter, but these lowlights do happen in the regular season as well, for whatever reason, Harden just does not have it on a given night. Looking back last November, there's a game in which he shot 8 of 23, below 35%, a loss to the Jazz, and that was when the Rockets were at their best. That was right before they got the win at Golden State. And of course, you go back through his career in Houston prior to last year, you can find many more examples as well. But the reason I point out all of these, a second Indiana game last year, a game they lost at the end of February, he was 5 of 17 from the field, below 30%. That was an unexpected loss for the Rockets at home in a stretch where they really needed production, and he wasn't there. They were slumping at that point, and that was where you were hoping the Rockets could hold on to that number 3 seed. Folks, this is not just a playoff problem. There have been games in the regular season where this has happened as well. It's just the lights are brighter in the playoffs, and that's what people remember most, and I get it. But in terms of actually trying to fix the problem, then again, you do need to contrast with the regular season and see if there's something different. And when you look at his body of work, not just the overall numbers, but I would say these occasional clunkers, these bouts of inconsistency, folks, they're there in the regular season as well. It's just, for whatever reason, they're not fixated on as much, especially by the national guys who tend to frame some of these discussions, especially as it pertains to social media. So, if we agree that inconsistency is the issue, but again, trying to fix it, we've identified what the issue is, now you want to go into the why of it. And my theory on this is that James is very unique amongst NBA stars of his generation, in which he doesn't really have an elite physical trait. You look at his contemporaries, LeBron James is the best athlete, in my opinion, ever to play the game. He is 6'9" and built like a tank. It is unfair how good he is. Russell Westbrook, who won MVP last year, everyone knows with him it starts with that quick twitch muscle fiber. It's that ability to stop on a dime, the power, the explosion. You look at Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant in Golden State. Stephen Curry might be the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA. Kevin Durant is not far behind them as a shooter, and he's almost 7 feet tall, which gives him an incredible advantage in terms of being able to shoot from the perimeter because, you know, he's a perimeter-oriented player, but most guys are not anywhere near long enough to actually contest his shots. All of those guys have certain physical traits to them that are just off the charts elite. With James, there are parts of his game, I would say across the board, he's very good in a lot of areas. But from a physical standpoint, I don't see that he's great in any. He's got a good first step, but he's not great. His athleticism, you know, certainly he's above average, but he's not Russell Westbrook. I guess you can point out that his deceleration, I saw an article, I believe it was in 538 last year about that. I guess that's at a elite level. That's about the closest thing he has is his ability to stop on the drives on a dime. But his shooting until this year has been, again, good, not great. There's not his height. You know, he's average height for a shooting guard. He's a little above average for a point guard. His ability to pass, certainly his vision is very good. But when you combine it with his turnovers, I wouldn't say it's quite elite in terms of this guy being just a traditional point guard, uber efficient. There's a lot of areas in his game that are very good. But in terms of what makes James great, it's not like he just has that Stephen Curry jump shot or Kevin Durant's incredible package for a guy that's almost 7 feet tall or LeBron just being chiseled like a Greek god or Russell Westbrook just having this absurd ability, that quick twitch muscle fiber to just explode at any given moment. None of those things really apply to James. What makes James elite, in my opinion, and it makes him the MVP frontrunner this year, and a guy who should have won it 2 of the last 3 years, is how smart he is. It's his cerebral nature. He is one of the smartest basketball players. He might be the smartest that I've ever seen play the game because he sees the court in a way that no one else can. And that's not just passing. Of course, it comes down to anticipation. He is able to anticipate what other players are going to do, what defenders are going to do. He sees the game 2 and 3 steps ahead. The way James Harden can make decisions on a dime, be it in the half-court offense, in transition, whatever it may be, for James Harden, his defining trait is his intelligence, in my opinion, which is just off the charts good. And that's what drives every other part of his game. Because if I were ranking James from a physical standpoint, again, a lot of these areas we just discussed, you know, certainly he's still really good, but I'd give him probably a 7 out of 10, an 8 out of 10. There's not just that, again, be it shooting for Curry or Durant, the explosion for Russell Westbrook, the athleticism for LeBron, there's not just that one box that you check for James physically and you say, that's a 10 of 10. For James, it's a lot of areas that are probably 7 of 10, 8 of 10, but then they're all lifted because you combine that with his intelligence, and even if there's a bit of a shortcoming relative to the other elite players in the league, then because James is able to anticipate so well, he's able to put himself in positions to succeed. And in general, that's really good. But at times, that can create a problem because if you get into a mental funk, and I think everyone gets into a mental funk, anyone who says, well, you know, you're just going to have full focus, never going to have things go wrong, well, folks, you've never played sports. All these guys get into mental funks from time to time. But then, you know, when you have a Curry, Durant, LeBron, whoever it may be, getting into one of those funks, then typically what happens, the way you sap yourself out of it, is you lean on whatever your elite physical trait is, the thing that's almost unstoppable, and then eventually you see the ball go in the bucket a couple of times, whatever it may be, and then eventually, you know, you're out of that bad mental place. For James, it's not that easy. And part of it's the officials. I know some of you are thinking that when I say all of that is part of his anticipation. You know, he knows where defenders are going to be. He can get to the line a lot and anticipate. And, you know, part of it we have seen in the playoffs is that if he doesn't get the whistles that he deserves or he thinks he deserves, then sometimes he can get very frustrated with that. But I think it's more than just the officials. You can see it with regards to just how he's trying to calculate what's going on all over the floor. It can be the timing of his drives. It can be where his teammates are supposed to be. It can manifest itself in a lot of ways. But when James, when he has a few possessions where things don't go his way, then he doesn't have that lightning quick first step, that Stephen Curry jumper from three that he can always depend on, that is always going to snap him out of that. And beyond just snapping him out mentally, maybe also make the defender respect another part of the floor. When things start going poorly for James, they have a tendency to snowball. And I think the reason for that is he doesn't have that one physical trait, or at least in the past he has not. I'll talk about that and, you know, how you fix it towards the end. He might have that trait now, but in the past he's not had that one physical trait, in my opinion, that is easy to pull him out of it. So I think his style of play, the nature of how James approaches the game of basketball, is different than a lot of the other guys he's compared to. And while he could have higher highs, because folks, you know, the flip side of this is that when James has a game where he's shooting really well, boy, you combine that with his athleticism and his highs are higher than anyone else. I honestly believe that James Harden's A game is better than anyone's, and that includes LeBron. And that's why, because it's almost like, you know, if one of those other physical traits is popping for him on a given night, if he's shooting that well from the perimeter, if he has extra springs in his step due to maybe a few days off, then boy, that extra intelligence, that cerebral nature can lift it just to an off-the-charts level. So I think because of that, James Harden's ceiling is higher than literally anyone's, but I would say his floor has been a little bit lower. So that's why, in my opinion, you have James, and it's not just a playoff problem. We have seen some of these games in the regular season as well where he does not, his floor, he'll have games that are a little bit worse than maybe another perceived star of his class. And I think that's important to understand because it's not about being a quitter. I don't even think it's a unique problem. It's because I'm sure some can argue that, well, you know, you just got to play through it. Well, no, I think all of these players get frustrated. It's just that these other players have certain tools in their toolbox. And when they get frustrated, they can kind of lean on to pull themselves out of it. And maybe that's not all the way there for James, or hasn't been the past few years. So that to me is the bigger factor why. It's not so much that, well, of course it's not that, well, he just doesn't like the pressure and shies away. One thing I should have mentioned in the identifying why, you know, I talked about his Houston examples. A lot of folks will lean back to the 2012 finals when James was in Oklahoma City with the Thunder. And, of course, he had, I wouldn't even say a subpar, well, he had a subpar series but against the Heat in those finals. And he came off the bench. Of course, it's a little unfair to hold someone accountable when they're coming off in a bench role and they're not, it's not really a big sample size at all. It wasn't even a down series. He was great in game two. It was either game one or game two in game five. He had two great games out of five. He just had two that were also really bad, and folks use that to kind of build the narrative of hashtag playoff Harden. But folks, the Thunder would not have even been in the playoffs unless Harden played out of his world in the Western Conference Finals against the Spurs that year. He hit the dagger in Game 5, and really for the entire series, he was the X factor. The Spurs had home court. They were the perceived better team. The Thunder won in large part not just because James Harden played well, but because James Harden played well, and he did it in the fourth quarter and brought them home. It wasn't Kevin Durant. I almost called him Kevin Westbrook. It wasn't Kevin Durant. It wasn't Russell Westbrook. It was James Harden who was bringing the Thunder home in that series. So again, that goes back to what we've said, is that when Harden has certain highs that are really, really high. It's that, in my opinion, the lows sometimes, I think it's directly correlated to his style of play, can be a little bit lower than other stars of his generation. And again, that's not letting him off the hook at all. That's not saying that it's okay, because if James wants to be considered an MVP candidate, if he wants to be considered amongst the best of his generation, then he needs to find a way to fix that. And there are ways to fix that. We'll talk about that in the third and final part of this in just a couple of moments. But again, the reason I mention all of this is to say that, folks, you're not letting him off the hook when you point out what his playoff successes have been. It's just to point out that the issue is not that, well, playoff James Harden is different. It's to point out that, folks, the issue with playoff James Harden is that there have been a few lows that are just too low. And we need to identify, you know, first what the problem is, and then B, come to, you know, I don't know, again, these are all theories. I can't tell you guys this is 100% truth. We're all guessing here, but at least try to figure out the why, because we understand what the problem is, and then at least have some clue as to why. That gives us the best shot to try and fix it. Now, in terms of the final part, which is actually fixing it, and why we hope that the 2017-2018 playoffs next spring and hopefully next summer don't have as many clunkers from Harden. The one thing that encourages me most so far this year from James, and I've mentioned this on the show plenty of times, is his evolution into an elite three-point shooter. Because that, to me, and again, it's you can say it's early. The Rockets are 18-4. They've only played 22 games. But folks, he is shooting 11 three-point attempts per game, and he is making 40.5% of them. When you consider the volume, folks, that is an incredible number. Even through 22 games, again, if you're shooting 11 attempts per game, that's well over 200 for the year. That's not a small sample. And again, he's facing the best of opposing defenses who are focused on James Harden. So this, you know, it's 22 games in, but it's not an insignificant sample when you factor in the overall volume. He has made the leap, again, career 36.5% shooter, and that's actually pushed upward by his start to this year. He's actually right at about 36%, which, again, is good, especially for the volume. It's just not elite. But for his volume, 40%, boy, and he's actually 40.5% now, that is elite. That, to me, will go a long way if that continues, if James Harden has taken a step forward in terms of his three-point shooting, to not letting him get to the low places that we saw, for example, in Game 2 and Game 6 of the Spurs series last year. Because yes, if things aren't working that well for him, worst case, that crossover, that step back, that's always going to be there. The key is, can you make enough shots to ultimately, of course, make the defense respect you from there, but beyond that, to kind of keep yourself going mentally, to keep yourself engaged. I think that's part of it. If that continues, that's a really, really good sign, because that's probably the easiest way. You know, you can get lighter. Now, he has taken some steps to improve his athleticism. We've talked before, he's in better shape than ever. He lost weight over the offseason. Hopefully that's making him more explosive, and that might help. But in general, it's tough to take your athleticism to a truly elite level. I think Harden's a very good athlete, but you know, no matter what weight he loses, I don't think he's going to be Russell Westbrook from that standpoint. He can make himself better, and any improvement is nice, But I think the easiest way to get one of those elite physical traits is to work in the lab, the gym, whatever you want to call it, on your three-point stroke. And to this point, that's paying off for the Rockets. It's a big part of why they're winning so many games, why Harden is your obvious MVP frontrunner. The second part of it, of course, is the mental side. Because, you know, it may start because of physical reasons, but as I mentioned, there is a tendency in which I think he checks out, where he gets frustrated. And I made this analogy last week in my show with Robert Land, but one of the reasons the Astros brought in Carlos Beltran, it was to mentor Carlos Correa, a young player, a superstar talent, who in my opinion had similar issues. I was told that he sort of needed a dad, and that's what Carlos Beltran was for him. And what I mean by that is a player who helps him to kind of channel his frustrations the right way. And I think that's where Chris Paul comes in. We've discussed this before. Chris Paul has a certain tenacity to him, a certain stick-to-itiveness, that's not even a phrase, but I'm making it one here, that I think will really, really help James, because Chris Paul, it's not that James is not a competitor. I think James, he's a gym rat. James wants to win as much as anyone. I think that's why he and Chris click so well. I think it's why they were friends even before coming to Houston. I think the difference is that they channel their competitiveness in different ways. For James, you know, of course, he does all the work leading into games, but there are sometimes, especially in the past, James is still evolving. He's still very young in the grand scheme of things. He's only 28 years old. He's still got 2 years to go before he even turns 30. So he's still learning. But for James, in the past, he does so much prep work. He studies so hard. He works so hard. And then when things don't go his way, there's a tendency to sort of roll your eyes and say, this isn't my night. We'll get him tomorrow. And, of course, unfortunately, sometimes, like Game 6, there's not a tomorrow, but that's a separate issue. With Chris, there's just a bulldog tenacity to him. No matter the situation, he is on everyone. And I think that may be exactly what James needs to, you know, if he gets frustrated, and sometimes James is frustrated for very legitimate reasons. Sometimes he's not getting whistles that he deserves, and that's happened a lot this year, especially with the rules changes that have partially targeted James Harden. There's sometimes when he's completely right in being frustrated. Either the officials are letting him down, his teammates, whatever it may be. James has been phenomenal in Houston, and yes, sometimes it's not his fault. But at the same time, you can't let that affect your overall effort. You've got to challenge that and challenge yourself to get even better, to rise above it. And I think that's where Chris Paul comes in. I think that's why they approach the game in similar ways in terms of their dedication, their gym rats, all that kind of stuff. But there's just a certain, just kind of dog chippiness to Chris Paul that I think it's not necessarily there for James. And again, I don't think it has to be. I certainly would not describe LeBron James or Kevin Durant as or Steph Curry in those terms. I don't think they're really wired like Chris Paul either. It's just, again, I think there are certain physical traits that can bail them out of it. For James, I think, you know, certainly, hopefully that shooting start is legit, but beyond that, there's a way that he can better, just like Carlos Correa and the Astros, there's a way he can better channel his frustrations when things don't go well. We haven't seen too many examples of it late in games this year, because thankfully the Rockets have been such a good team that there have not been very many close games. We'll see more in the months ahead, but on paper, that's where I really like this James Harden-Chris Paul marriage, because I think Chris Paul is in a unique spot based on his experience in the NBA, based on his personality, to keep James's focus and channel it in the right way, rather than starting to think when things don't go his way, I don't have it tonight, this isn't our night, whatever the case may be. I think having Chris Paul to kind of guide him. And, you know, I know Mike D'Antoni's a great coach, but it's just different when it's one of your contemporaries, when it's one of your fellow players. You can say all the right things to James. I'm sure the Rockets have said all of this in the past. None of this is just groundbreaking, mind-blowing stuff. But it's different when you have someone that you are actually going to war with on the basketball floor that can help you from that standpoint. And I think that's what Chris Paul has the potential to do for James Harden. Now, again, this will be the last that we talk about this for a while, hopefully, because, you know, we're getting back to basketball tonight, Rockets Jazz. But I did think it was important to discuss this, our last, it's not an off day, but our last non-game episode for a little while. At least that's what I hope, because now we finally get back to basketball every other day. Rockets at Utah tonight, at Portland Saturday, and then back home for a 7-game homestand, which we'll get to see a lot of them around Houston before Christmas. But folks, the reason I wanted to do this episode, And I hope that even if you consider yourself a hardened critic, I hope you understand better why I think it's important to have a broader discussion of his playoff, both his strengths and his shortcomings. It's not to give him an excuse for the bad games. Those are very real, and those need to be improved upon. But some of the discussions that we're seeing, especially in the national media, it's okay to also say that those are wrong, that those are too simplistic. Because if we oversimplify it to just saying, well, he choked, or he quit, or something like that, then folks, that you're not going to be able to fix the problem because you're not identifying what it is. And I think to actually get into improving these issues for James, you've got to have a legitimate understanding of what has happened, why the logical reasons for that might be. And then, of course, that gives you the best shot to hopefully rectify those for coming playoff runs, again, as soon as just a few months from now when the Rockets get going next April. And I think, you know, of course, they haven't clinched, but folks, the Rockets are going to make the playoffs, spoiler alert. So, yeah, we'll get to see very soon how this stuff plays out, particularly his shooting, and I think more important than that, the relationship with Chris Paul, both on the court in terms of how they play together basketball, but I think more than that, the impact that Chris Paul can potentially have on James in terms of his mental approach, not just to the game, but within the game when things get going in a really tough spot in a competitive playoff series, which it certainly will be with teams like the Warriors waiting out there for the Rockets this coming spring. Anyway, that's about all that I know to say on that topic. We've discussed it a lot lately, but again, based on Max Kellerman's take, based on what exploded on social media yesterday, I thought it was important to do one episode exclusively on that. Again, this will be kind of the end of this for a while. If you want to send this to your friends who are skeptical of James, please do. But again, I've said my piece. It is what it is. We'll see if it changes in January. I'm thinking like it's almost football mode. No, we'll see if it changes in April and May. Got to wait a little bit longer than that, of course, for the NBA playoffs. Anyway, the good news, back to basketball tonight, Rockets Jazz, 9:30. So if you want to follow my thoughts during the game, you can do so at Ben Dubose, or you can always follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnRockets. Also email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. If you've got thoughts, criticisms, good or bad, we want to hear from you. If we can do better for you, we want to be the source for diehard Rockets fans, so let us know what you want to hear. Again, LockedOnRockets on Twitter or LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is the official email address for the program. Once again, Rockets Jazz tonight, 9:30. Look forward to talking with y'all during the game. Also, one last plug for the show. If you have not already subscribed to us, please do that. And also, wherever you subscribe to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, leave us a 5-star review. That's the best way, besides supporting our advertisers, leave us a 5-star review. That's the best way that we're able to continue looking viable to advertisers and, of course, having the business model to support us being what we are now, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. So with all the plugs out of the way, I will wrap things up there. Again, thanks as always to you guys for listening, and I look forward to talking with you guys during the game on Twitter. And, of course, after, it might take until tomorrow morning, but yeah, we will have post-game recap to Rockets Jazz as the Rockets look to win their 8th in a row and what would be their 14th in 15 games. First game in 4 nights for the Rockets. Again, 9:30 tip tonight. That's Thursday night on TNT. Look forward to talking with you guys both during the game on Twitter and, of course, after the game right here on Lockdown Rockets.